The NBA playoffs are here, and with FanDuel, your group chat's about to be going off. Because right now, new customers can bet $5 and get $150 in bonus bets if you win. And with live bets, your heart emojis will really be racing from tip-off to the final buzzer. Plus, when you win, you'll get paid faster than your friends can send you a victory gift. Or is it GIF? Who cares? You won! So get the word out to your crew and download FanDuel today. New customers bet $5 to get $150 in bonus bets if you win. Make every moment more with FanDuel, America's number one sports book. Official partner of the NBA.
21 plus and present in Ohio. First online real money wager only. $10 first deposit required. Bonus issued is non-withdrawable bonus bets that expire 7 days after receipt. See full terms at FanDuel.com/sportsbook. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER.
I didn't just watch Michael Jordan as a kid. I loathed Michael Jordan as a kid. I was and still am the world's best Laker fan. You know that. Lakers all day, Forum Blue and Gold, Magic Johnson, Michael Cooper, let's fucking go. But now, the Lakers had already lost the 1989 finals of the Pistons, and then the Pistons won again in 90. But I was a dumb kid. I thought the Lakers still had something left in the tank. I believed the Lakers were on their way back to a title. Kareem had retired and Riles left the team, but Magic was still in his prime. Worthy was an all-star. Hell, even AC Green made an all-star team. So when 90 became 91 and the Bulls finally beat the Pistons to make Jordan's first finals, again, dumb kid Neil believed wholeheartedly the Lakers were going to hang another banner in the Forum. But Chicago and Phil Jackson figured out LA. Scotty guarded Magic, Michael took over, and it was a five-game series, Mike's first title. I didn't know it at the time because, again, dumb. But Michael Jordan signaled the death of Magic Johnson's era. I didn't take that kindly because Magic was everything to me. There was even this rumored one-on-one game between the two of them, Michael and Magic, around this time. I remember thinking Michael might actually kill Magic Johnson in one-on-one. They might play this game and Michael would murder Magic, and then my favorite player would be exposed and gone forever. Again, last time, very dumb kid. So now here we are, 1992 NBA Finals. Clyde Drexler's Portland Trailblazers made it out of the West. Michael Jordan made his second straight championship series with the Bulls. Game one is in Chicago, and Mike blew the doors off the joint. Beautiful fadeaways. Mike's jackknifing all over the court. He's in full control. And then came the threes. Now, this is 1992. Nobody's taking the three-point shot at this time. Nobody. So when Mike started popping threes, it was a genuine surprise. And when they started going in, people started freaking out. Two threes became three. Three became four and then five and then six three-pointers in the first half. And with the crowd and the TV announcers in full disbelief, Michael Jordan looked to the sideline and shrugged. And everyone saw it. And even though Mike may not have known what was happening in that moment, everyone else did. Even a dumb kid like me. Michael Jordan was taking over the NBA, and he wasn't giving it back. Michael Jordan shrugged today on First Ballot. Welcome to First Ballot, the podcast that celebrates the moments in sports that really matter and decides if they're good enough for induction into the First Ballot Hall of Fame. I'm your host, Neil, a.k.a. Gotham Coach, the long-lost Gasol brother, the Glass City Cobra, the podcast Jordan Clarkson, half Filipino, half not Filipino, all Jollibee. I'm not the biggest Lakers fan. I am the best Lakers fan. Mr. Not Always Right, but never ever wrong. Coming to you live from the Shaquille O'Neal branded Office Depot big and tall executive suite desk chair. The First Ballot Hall of Fame podcast is brought to you by Ball is Life and the Ball is Life Podcast Network. This podcast available on your favorite podcast platform, all because Ball is Life makes it happen. Follow at Ball is Life on all social platforms. Michael Jordan shrug is a great sports moment. We know that. We're not debating that. But what we don't know is if the shrug is a first ballot Hall of Fame moment. We're going to debate the merits of that moment today. And here to do it with me is one of this podcast's finest guests. His episode was one of the most listened to episodes of this program. We're thankful for that. We're thankful he's back. Let's go through the credits. First off, one of the best to ever do it on the Bird. World-class tweeter, really jump-started his media career off Twitter. Next, the True Withers Show on YouTube. Scoob, Mick, the tears, as good as it gets. Then he's covering MMA for Underdog Fantasy. Fantastic. Now, Sheed and Tyler, the brand new podcast from Underdog Fantasy, starring NBA super legend Rasheed Wallace. You got to check it out. Our guest today puts the Tyler in Sheed and Tyler. Tyler, he is. It's the incomparable Mr. Trill Withers.
What an intro, man. What an intro every time. Listen, happy to be here. Thank you for having me, sir.
Thank you for coming back. Your first episode, wildly successful for us, for our program. You established during that episode the concept of the elite kikir. Calling Shaq an elite kikir. That is a phrase. The concept of a kikir is a phrase that will live with me forever. Introduced into the lexicon by Trill Withers. Another feather for your cap.
I'm honored, man. Always honor.
We bonded, I believe, forever over a mutual and genuine love of Stromile Swift's dunk on Tyrus Thomas.
Yes.
I had an out-of-body experience. I asked you last episode, what's your favorite dunk? I looked at you, had an out-of-body experience, thought to myself, well, he might say Stromile Swift's dunk over Tyrus Thomas. And then you did. World-class dunk. It was during, towards the end of the show, so we didn't get to talk about it more. I pulled the audio from that dunk, and I'd like to listen for you and I to listen to that together and just have talk about it. Here we go. A very famous Marv Albert call on this dunk because they're playing the Nets, and Marv was calling the Nets game. But this is from the Chicago guys, Stacey King and company. Let's listen to it together.
Swift drives in, and he just hammered that baby.
Monster. Oh, my goodness. That was a headache right there.
He reared back, and their bench is going crazy still.
Your thoughts on that?
If you didn't know what happened and you only heard that noise, like, what would you think of it? Like, I would have thought, like, the stanchion fell on him. Oh, my goodness. That's on his head. Oh, that's a murder. Like, that's how good the dunk is. Yeah. Stromile Swift killed that man. That's how good the audio alone is. Then you add in the visual, which we've discussed, and I regret to inform, it's probably still my favorite dunk of all time.
It's so good. You mentioned last episode, it's the best sounding dunk. I wholeheartedly agree with that. There's something about, you compared it last episode to gunfire. I agree with that. There's something about the crunch of the springs early. Let's listen to that.
Swift drives in.
So that's just crunch of springs right there. That's just initial impact. He's about to let go of the hoop. Let's listen to that. There it is, that thunk, that good hearty thunk of him letting go.
The rims don't sound like that anymore.
They don't sound like that anymore.
I don't know if it's the spring, new metal, or whatever silver's got going on, but the rims, I don't think they sound like that anymore.
I want microphones on every part of the basket, and I want the volume turned up a couple decibels across the entire game. I don't care if it's too loud. I want to hear basket sounds. For that exact reason, it's an absolute annihilation. I also, what I like about that call is whoever that is from Chicago, that's like monster.
Dead baby, monster.
Oh my goodness,
monster.
He had to rev that one up, monster.
And I appreciate having Stacey King on a call like that too. For him to be like, that's a headache. That's just fantastic. A great call from the Chicago guys on that. Stromile Swift dunk. Stromile, I want Stromile to come on this show. When we get Stromile, we'll have to have you back because We got to talk. I want to just talk for an hour about that dunk and about all of his dunks. And he does the hand thing, too, like whatever that hand celebration bird thing
is. He probably doesn't even. He's like, yeah, I dunk on people like that literally all my life. He's like, I've been doing that since I was 7 years old. I don't remember this one. The one you two guys will never forget. I've never thought about it a second time.
That'd be the coolest fucking thing you could ever say. Last time we table set your favorite sport, NBA basketball, favorite team, University of Kentucky Wildcats. Favorite athlete, Randy Moss, Barry Larkin. You also threw out Mike Vick. Can we talk quickly about Rasheed Wallace, Rasheed and Tyler?
Sure.
What's Rasheed like?
He's a terrible human being, man. He's just a bad person. No, Rasheed is great. He's like I hope people will tap in for the stories, but he is such an interesting person independent of basketball. So I feel like that's the part. I feel like that's my job to pull that side at them, to show people that part. They know the stories, and they are crazy stories, but I don't know. He lives a fascinating life, and I hope we can get into some of that.
Yeah, if you tell me Rasheed Wallace is going to do a podcast, I go, there's going to be a fantastic story from in every episode that's going to go viral, that's going to drive people back to listening to the full episode. Just from listening to him, to you guys, and a couple of the clips that are already out, I go, you being able to pull things out of him, like him in an unabated format where like there's no rules. It's not, he doesn't have to stop talking. He doesn't have to go. He's comfortable with you. He's not on NBC sitting in front of camera across from, you know, Marv Albert or whoever it is. He can be comfortable. He can be himself. He can give his true thoughts. I listened to him talking about you asking him about where the fine money goes. I want to go, oh my God, because I don't know where the fine money goes either. Did you guys, after you stop recording, do you guys talk a little bit more about the fine money? What is your general thought on where the fine money goes? Fantastic job getting Rasheed to talk about the fine money.
It's fascinating because I did in my mind, I don't know if I ate some garbage a long time ago or read an article, heard a podcast, something. I thought it was like these guys pay fines. And at the end of the year, for the most part, you get it back. Mm. You either get it back. They put it back on your check. You might get some of it back. So that's why guys weren't really too pressed about it. Mm-hmm. But to now hear that guys just have no idea where it's going, that's kind of crazy, no? Like, even if they just said it's going right into Adam Silver's helicopter fund, you know something. You know more than we don't know where it's going. So, we might need to do, like, some boots-on-the-ground expose work.
I was just going to say, and literally any chance you guys get to bring that up to him, I just stoke that fire one more time. See what he might have to say. Get him to start asking the tough questions. Just get him to the edge there, and then you step back and be like, hey, what did I – listen, she took over and started asking all these hard questions. Let's get an answer to them. It really is true. I don't know where that money goes. Let me put it this way. What is the percentage chance you believe some of the money taken from player fines have been misappropriated for personal reasons?
Oh, high.
Yeah, high.
100%. High. 10 out of that, whatever scale. Even if they were saying this is going to NBA cares or whatever, we've seen how those funds be missing. Not even just for the NBA, just in general. That feels like a catch-all. So if they're not even giving that guys, then the misappropriation level is probably in the red.
You really got it. You got to make that a pillar of your show. Is like
find out where the fine money is. Yeah. It's tens of thousands of dollars for these guys. Probably hundreds of thousands. You know what I'm saying? Depending on how long you play and how much you get into it, and to just have no idea where. Like at least Uncle Sam, if you know what's going on, Uncle Sam. Right. This you just have no idea.
It really is crazy to think about because as a fan, when you see a guy get teed up or thrown out or whatever, they say a fine came in. You literally dismiss it. You couldn't care less. You go $10,000 fine. Who gives a shit? It's the NBA, not to dismiss all of the fantastic players and NBA superstars who make this money, but to a certain extent, it is nothing to them. $10,000 is a big chunk of money for literally everyone else on the planet. I have to think this way. Someone went to Hawaii on Rasheed Wallace's dime. Had to have.
Absolutely. Or he covered the annual luncheon for somebody. Yeah. He covered the transportation for everybody from the hotel to the airport. Yes. It, some of those funds feel like they inevitably ended up there.
I'd love to know where that money goes. We got it. We got it. Who can we get? We got to get a disgruntled former NBA employee to come on and tell us those stories. It's a fantastic gambit for you guys. Keep doing it forever. We got to dive into the moment. There's a lot to listen to in this episode. It's a fantastic moment picked by Trill. Michael Jordan shrug. I just, in sort of prepping for this episode, I went on ESPN, looked up scores or whatever. I think it was after the Lakers, my Lakers, won the in-season tournament.
Congratulations on
that,
by the way.
Thank you so much. I'm very proud of it. Not like hang a banner proud at crypto.com, but I understand that the Lakers maybe were asked to do that. But anyways, I go on ESPN, and the first clip I see, Michael Gallup hits the Jordan shrug against the Eagles. I guess Michael Gallup is a Cowboys wide receiver. I don't know much about the football. But hits the Jordan shrug against the Eagles. Circumstances are totally different. I'm like, oh, I wonder what Gallup, like, if he had a crazy game. I think he caught like two balls, and one of them was for
you. Talk about misappropriation. Can't do that after 2 for 24, whatever he said. It was a nice catch, a pivotal catch, but come on.
I guess the point is, you can't shrug anymore in sports without it being directly tied and attributed to Michael Jordan. True or false?
True. That's a fact. That's why I'm saying it was misappropriated, because it's like, yeah, you can't shrug after two. It could have been the best catch ever. It wasn't the moment we'll get into. That alone, that being the, I don't know how old Michael Gallup is, but I'm willing to guarantee he was not born. Like, he's in the NFL currently. I'm willing to bet he was not alive when that happened. So maybe that's not what he was thinking of. But us old hags, not unlike ourselves, that's what we think of. So that's what my mind went to.
It's really crazy to think about a guy owning a shrug, like a move that is that, like, that's not really a sports thing. Like, as I think about other like movements that are sort of owned by someone, I think about like that hand up to your ear, Hulk Hogan thing. That's like a good one. But that's like an obvious thing. It's like no one else would do that for any other reason other than like trying to, you know, fire up a crowd. But a shrug, literally anybody could shrug at any point in the day, anywhere in life. And now that's basically Michael Jordan's thing. If you do that in sports, yeah, that's Michael Jordan's copyright. Michael Jordan, 1992.
That's the influence. That's the impact.
Let's get into this. To decide whether Michael Jordan's shrug goes into the first ballot Hall of Fame, we have to go through our Hall of Fame credentials. Those are the categories by which we judge our moment. The first credential, as always, analytics, stats, numbers. Here are some of the numbers behind this moment. Michael Jordan played 34 minutes. He was 16 of 27, 6 of 10 from deep, 39 points, 3 boards, 11 assists, 2 steals. The Bulls won game one. 122-89. Trill, do you remember how this series went? Do you remember what the Bulls, obviously the Bulls won, but do you remember how many games?
6 is what I have in my head.
That's right. I would have said 5, but you're right, it's 6. Portland won game 2 in Chicago after this breakout game.
I mean, this Portland team was a good team for that era. This is going into the Dream Team Olympics, and y'all know it because on the opening broadcast, they have the Olympics, the 5 rings.
That's right.
On there. So this is just weeks away. And Drexler is, he's being painted as, he was first team All-NBA. I can't even say painted. He was a phenomenal player. And it's like he's going against the guy. But we didn't know he was the guy. Like, we have all the hindsight of the shrug. It's just one of the moments. At the time, he had won a ring. But the guy he had won it against was calling the game.
Yes.
Magic Johnson sitting there calling the game on the sidelines the year after they had played it. So just knowing how the internet and how people's minds work, you know, there was like, they were calling it a bubble ring for Jordan, I imagine. They're saying it's not real. Magic's not playing. They were old. You know what I'm saying? They're discounting that. So all that going into game one.
What do you miss about 90s basketball? I'm going to leave it right there. I don't want to lead you. What do you miss about 90s basketball?
The presentation.
Yeah. It's, I don't know what it is. I watched the entire game and I was really trying to study. It also, maybe it's just, I asked you a question and now I've taken over. Maybe it's just that we're old and we look back in it so fondly, but there's what makes it so good. But I totally agree with you. What makes the presentation of it so good?
Like it feels like a moment. Like they're leading up, like this is game one. I think now, and like every game has a million cameras, right? It's hard to feel like this is game one of the finals. Back then, it's like, oh yeah, no, you might not have seen Portland all year, depending where you live. You might not have seen Chicago, depending where you live. This is an event. This feels like an event. It's presented like an event. Like the graphics, the design, the overlays, the transitions, Ahmad Rashad. I feel like he just adds a touch of class.
Totally.
To it, you got Marv Albert, who was like in his prime, I would imagine, like his announcing prime, where it just, I don't know, it just feels like an event. It's just a clean presentation. It's just Bulls. That's it. The old finals logos on the court, they're beautiful. It's just a very simplistic look.
It's classy.
It's very clean.
Yes. I totally want to echo everything that you just said, not the least of which is Marv, Mike Fratello, Magic, Ahmad Rashad. He's going to come up. We're going to talk about Ahmad a bunch in this episode. The music. Oh, I can play this music. My God, I can play this. Why not? Why not play this? Here we go.
This is the NBA on NBC.
You're right. There's really like the lack of cameras and coverage before, like you're not seeing, you know, you're not inundated by coverage and, you know, cell phone footage of every player walking in the gym. Like you're a little bit withheld from you. And so when you walk into this game, you are like really excited and jonesing for this thing to start. There is something just phenomenal about the old coverage. It's amazing.
Absolutely. Like Ahmad Rashad is telling, you know, about how Jordan is feeling. This is news now. It wouldn't have been news because we would have had 10 cameras on him beforehand.
Right.
Woj would have broke it beforehand. Yes. He would have tweeted about we would have been no intrigue, no mystery.
I also like, and I want to get your thoughts on this, I like seeing more mid-range and post-up basketball. It just is like it's a different flavor of sport. And now it's like all threes and all driving to the baskets. And I get why that makes sense, why that makes logical, analytical sense. But I miss seeing a guy go, like the Bulls did such a nice job during this game of Jordan obviously gets his in the first half. And then that third quarter, they really start spreading it around. Pippen gets off. They're going into Cartwright. Cliff Livingston is dunking basketballs. Like they're spreading the ball around and it just feels, and they're scoring from all over. And I don't care if the team doesn't score 130 points. I like seeing different styles and kinds of basketball within the game. And I feel like you just don't see that much anymore.
What's wild is the Bulls playing that style. What did they score? Would you say 120 something?
122.
So it's like you play that style, you'll get your open looks. And it's definitely like now it's they play math, not bad. Again, I'm just going to sound old all the show. They play math, not basketball. But you would see before, like Jordan misses first couple of shots. So you see him go to the mid range. You see them work him in the post. You see them like start the first shot of the game. It's Kevin Duckworth. The second shot of the game is Bill Cartwright. Game full of future Hall of Famers. And those are the first two shots for the first game of the NBA Finals. Because it's like, yeah, you have to establish your big man.
Yes.
Keep him invested. Now it's like, we can't do that. He should be shooting a three. Like, that's a punted shot.
What is that, though? Like, because you're right. And even just hearing you say that sentence, we have to establish our big men. Because Duckworth and Cartwright weren't big parts of either of these teams. They weren't a big deal, but there is something lovely about we have to establish this guy and make sure that he's eating too and, you know, getting a little bit of activity because then he's going to stay engaged on the defensive end of the court.
Mm-hmm.
That stuff is kind of lost now when it's just all pick and roll, high pick and rolls, you know, driving kicks, you know, pull it out to the corner three for on a fast break.
Mm-hmm.
I appreciate you being the guy to sound so old on this podcast, but I couldn't agree more with you. There is a loss of, I don't know what that is. I can't put my finger on what it is. I'll keep thinking about it, but there is a loss of that style that I really, really miss. I really loved it and I really miss it. I hope that it's one of those situations where it feels like the car was way off the road in terms of not paying attention to analytics. And now we've got that influx of analytics and the driver is jerking the wheel back to get the car back on the road. And we're going to drive over some bodies to get the car back on the street. But eventually I hope things even out and we can straighten out the wheel and get a little bit more of the basketball that I grew up with back into the game. This is the oldest I've ever sounded on this podcast, but it's just how I feel. The Trailblazers made their first 7 shots of this game. Trill mentioned Jordan didn't start off well, which this is like a perfect the shrug game is like a perfect moment for me in that I remember the shrug vividly. You can all, as you're listening to this, picture what Michael Jordan is doing. Picture the shot that you see of Michael Jordan shrugging. I'm thinking of the exact same thing. I remember the shrug vividly. What I didn't remember was what really happened. I did not remember that Jordan started the game 1 of 4 and missed mm-hmm. his first 2 3-pointers.
Mm-hmm.
And he also missed his last 3-point shot of the game, which absolutely nobody remembers. So it really started cold and then obviously came on. In the second quarter, Jordan made his first 7 shots of that quarter, but they weren't consecutive, which blew me away because I'm like thinking maybe the shrug comes at the end of Jordan hitting 6 or 7 shots in a row. He right. did make 7 straight shots, but they weren't consecutive because B.J. Armstrong is coming down and getting shots up. I almost was like appalled at the fact that the Bulls teammates were taking shots in the middle of what felt like a Michael Jordan run. Did you get that same feeling?
Somewhat, but then I had to check myself. I was like, is this my modern basketball
right
brain? Because right. one of the more impressive things is he's cooking. Like, if you take away those 6'3", he's still just cooking from everywhere. He's getting in transition, tip slams. Like, he's just getting his, but within the flow of the offense.
Totally.
I think, like, in my head, maybe I'll blame The Last Dance, but in my head, it was like, yeah, no, he came in. He hit 6 straight to right. start the game. He right. shrugged. They were down 18-0. That was the end of the game. The Trailblazers went home after that. And it's like, no, Portland started really hot. Jordan started cold. And it feels like as they worked the offense, it feels like as Pippen had the ball, really, as that started, Michael Jordan would walk into wide open shot after wide open shot.
He really did have a number of absolutely gorgeous plays. The mm-hmm. fadeaways, that half sort of, you know, fake on the post, he's faking with that right shoulder and turning back over the left. And that flick of his wrist and the gigantic hand and that fingertip control, just beautiful, gorgeous basketball and shots. And again, as Trill said, from all over the court, it is beautiful. And it is a sustained dominance rather than some sort of crazy run. The shrug is really the punctuation on just a phenomenal back half of the first quarter and a phenomenal second quarter the entire time that he played. It really is amazing. Chicago's up 66-51 at half. Third quarter, Jordan has 4 points and barely plays in the fourth. Ends up finishing again 16 of 27. Jordan had made only 27.
But he had 33 points.
39.
I was going to say, that's a bad game now. 27 points, 30. What's his true shooting? What's his effective field goal percentage? Who knows?
Jordan only had 27 made 3-pointers all season long. 27 all season long. He has 6.5. Jordan only had 5 made threes in 16 previous playoff games in his career up until this point.
The math was right, Neil. The math was right.
I just keep sitting here going, why? Well, they got to move the 3-point line back. They got to move the 3-point line back. I don't know why that's not very, very obvious.
Because nobody's still taking, like, a thing they're saying early on is, like, Portland's the team that takes, you know, like, the most threes in the game. They're taking, like, 11 threes. It's like they're by far and away leading the league. It's like Terry Porter, 3-point sniper. He's hitting, like, 2 a game. So now Snyder, he's hitting at high percentage, but it just wasn't, I don't know, the car, we were still off the road yet. We still hadn't overcorrected yeah. that, yeah, yeah, 3 is yeah. way more than 2 in these terms.
MJ had 19 minutes in the first half and outscored the entire Blazers starting 5, 35-31. First out, Jordan over the Blazers starting five. Jordan in this in the series. So again, I'm like thinking the shrug is the moment from this entire finals. Only not I don't mean to dismiss the 39, but he only had 39 in game one. In game two, he has 39 again. And in game five, he has 46. Again, if you're, you know, when as I'm thinking about, does this shrug go into the first ballot Hall of Fame? Obviously, it's super cool that he did it. Obviously, it's super memorable. But like, are the stats there? 39, it's a great game, but it wasn't his best game of this finals.
It wasn't, but that's, it's a bar that Michael Jordan has set that high.
That's true.
You know what I mean? And even, I think it's a testament that he has that many 39 plus performances in a final, in a short game series. And it's like, yeah, you got to have something to, like, that's the memorable one. Like, the people can't see it. Right, it's off camera, but I've got a, it's artwork my friend Nick Trigg did. And it's, like, the singular moment from each of Jordan's rings. Mm. And the second one is, of course, it's the shrug.
Yeah.
Because, like, what else could it be? What do you remember about him scoring 47? What do you remember about 39 in this game, too? You remember that shrug, though.
That's probably the best argument for this moment going into the first ballot Hall of Fame, because you do remember the shrug and you don't remember anything about the game, and it doesn't even fucking matter. Like, I don't remember what he scored until I watch this. I didn't remember hardly anything about this game other than the shrug, and I'll never forget that shrug. I'll never forget who was flying out to guard him. I'll never forget who he turned to. I'll never forget, you know, what color jersey he's wearing. I remember it vividly. Jordan shot 43% from three over this finals, averaged almost 36 a game, averaged almost four boards per game, 6.5 assists and 1.7 steals. Chicago did win its second title. Let me think about, you know, again, with 39 points, do you know who has the most points in an NBA finals game?
Single game?
Yeah.
That's not Michael Jordan.
Number one is not Michael Jordan. Jordan is two. I didn't know this.
For fine. I feel like I want to say somebody random. Like, I have a random Tony Parker. That's, I feel like it's somebody, like, it's going to be Wilt Chamberlain, but it's like, no, you, I don't remember Tony Parker scoring 78 against the Cavaliers.
I love the idea of Tony Parker being at the heart of random food. Elgin Baylor scored 61 in the 61 finals against the Celtics. Jordan scored 63. That's the highest scoring output in a playoff game. Mm-hmm. Elgin had 61 against the Celtics in the finals. Then Jordan had 55. Rick Barry had 55 and took 48 shots to get those 55, which is a blast.
Bad math.
Bad math. LeBron had 51 against the Warriors.
Golden State, right? I remember game one. That's the one that came to mind. I was like, somebody's got to have more than 51.
Most points in a playoff quarter. Because, again, I'm, like, looking at all these things from, like, just a statistical point of view. Like, how great is this game? Maybe I can put together a statistical argument. It's not really here. Again, most points in a playoff game, Elgin Baylor had 61. This was, again, Jordan had 39. Most points in a playoff quarter, Sleepy Floyd had 29. Most points in a playoff half, Sleepy Floyd had 39. Most points in a finals quarter, Isaiah had the 25 against the Lakers in 88 on a bad wheel. Most points in a finals half, Michael Jordan, 35 in this game against the Blazers. Most consecutive points by one player against a team in the playoffs, LeBron's 25 in Detroit. Last stat here, I'm going through stats and looking up records in the playoffs and the finals. I found the record for most threes taken in a game without the player making one.
Oh, no.
The answer is 12. Somebody, there are three guys that took 12 threes in a game and didn't make one. Brooke Lopez, Eric Gordon, and Justin Anderson took 12 threes in a game and didn't make one.
That's, I mean, because at a certain point, you're like, I got to make the, after like six, you're like, the next one's.
Next one's going.
Next one's going. Then you're 0 for 9. It's like, well, I'm not going to miss forever. But maybe you do. Maybe you do. Maybe you just miss forever.
The record for most missed three-pointers in a game, 16. So that 12 is, they were 0 for 12. The most missed attempts in a game, most three-pointers attempted and missed in a game is 16. It's happened seven times in the NBA. Damon Stoudemire did it once. And the other six times, James Harden.
Why did I know? I was like, it's not going to be Steph, even though he takes enough for those. Of course it was going to be James Harden.
James Harden missed 16 threes six times.
See, that's it's one of those, but if you look, he probably made seven. So it's like, yeah, hey, man, he still finished right. with 48, 12, and 12. He just missed 16 threes.
That's, I do, when I think about Kevin Durant, I will always feel sick that Kevin Durant didn't have two or three seasons of that like permanent green light, that like Kobe 05, James Harden, whatever years those were, where it's like, you can literally do whatever you want. We want to see how good you are at the offensive side of basketball. Here, go ahead. It kills me because I look at KD and go, that's probably the best scorer I've ever seen. And I never felt like I got those, that like completely unfettered, don't worry about anybody else, just go and get yours.
No, I agree. I don't think we get what makes Kevin Durant Kevin Durant without that. Like if he had that, the mentality, like, yeah, let me just see if I could go get 40. He knows he can. We know he can. He's like, I can be the best decoy ever and still get 27. You look up and I've got 27 points. That's how good I am at this.
Durant's fascinating. All right, let's keep moving. The next credentials are eye test. What did we see in this moment, Trill? What did you see in the first half of this game that maybe puts this moment in the first Bell Hall of Fame?
Well, I mean, the shrug in itself, of course. Poor RIP, and also poor Uncle Cliff Robinson, who just happens to be the guy that's always in the background of the shrug. That's tough. And I guess the thing, what I saw was, I don't know, like you mentioned, Jordan was one for four starting the game. There was never a panic. Like, again, as Portland was hitting every single shot, like I was watching that game. 90 seconds into that game, the Bulls have committed three fouls, and Phil Jackson calls a time. 90 seconds of the game, Phil Jackson's like, what the fuck, guys? And there's still never no jitters, no panic. It was never like a, we're down, Jordan's like, okay, just give me the ball and get out of my way. He was still committed to running the offense, knowing that I'll get my points in transition, knowing that something they said on the broadcast, or I couldn't believe they talked about it first quarter. Marv Albert's like, Phil Jackson pointed out that the Portland Trailblazers can't close games. What do we make of that? I was like, oh my God, Phil Jackson just said that to, that's just first quarter fodder. But as you watch that game, it's like they get a big lead, and every time it gets close, Clyde Drexler is airballing a shot, which led to, I think, Jordan's fifth or sixth three. Somebody's falling down. There's a run, and it cuts to Rick Adelman on the sideline, like not calling a timeout, not doing anything. And it's like, and they end up losing that game by, what, 30 points? Mm-hmm. So it's like, maybe Phil knew.
Jordan really does have supreme confidence. Completely unflappable, in total control of this game. When I watched this game, one thing happened that I was like, oh, this is fascinating. So you were just mentioning the run. Jordan, I think, hits his fifth. Yeah, okay, this is the sequence. Jordan hits his fifth three, and the Trailblazers call a timeout. The game restarts. Jordan, Pippen gets a steal, misses a layup. Jordan gets that incredible tip dunk. And then Jordan hits his sixth three-pointer, and fucking the Chicago Stadium is on fire. The place is going nuts. And NBC stayed in the arena during that timeout. That was a huge moment.
That was awesome, yeah.
I don't remember when that stopped, but that will fucking never happen ever again. If a network has some commercials they can play, they are running those commercials. I don't know what made NBC stay in that game call, but it is an amazing moment. There's cheerleaders with American flag leather jackets. Benny the Bull is swinging a giant flag. There's an old adorable couple that can't get on beat. There's this old white guy and old white lady, and they can't get on beat with the clapping and stuff. And you're watching this, and the place is going nuts, and the announcers are doing a wonderful job, and you're watching clips of Phil getting the team together, and Jordan's drinking Gatorade, and Drexler's like got his head in his hands, and it's just like, man, that is a moment of this broadcast. You talked about presentation at the top of the show. Staying in that time, staying in the game broadcast during that timeout made it amazing.
Yeah, I think it was at a time, I can't remember what I read. It was like around that time when people were realizing, okay, sports is like TV's here. Sports is TV. Let's make it a broadcast.
Yeah.
It's like they were bringing in people that had like movie or play backgrounds and just applying it to sports. It was like, okay, yes, this is a presentation. Like it's all of it. It's the sight. It's the sound. So if we need to stop for a second and just let the crowd breathe, like you're supposed to, part of this as a presentation, you're supposed to feel like you're here. Let's look around. Let's look at the rafters. Look at people up in the highest row going crazy, losing their shit right now. That's what made it part of the presentation.
And I completely agree. And Marv Albert, as the MC of this, he did such, let's move on to the ear test. What did we hear in this moment? He did such an amazing job calling this game in that Jordan would hit a shot and Marv would leave a little pocket of air to let you hear the arena, and then he'd add something. He just did a fantastic job. Here are Marv's calls on the first, I think it's the first two or three threes of this game. Let's listen to them together.
Jordan again from three-point land. Most unusual to see Michael bombing away. That's his third three-point attempt, and he finally hits. Jordan for three! Well, Michael has gone to a new weapon. That's his fourth three-point field goal.
He's ready to play.
Jordan for three! Yes! That is an NBA Finals record. Five three-pointers in a half.
And the music. The music. All of that corny, like, rock jock. What do they call that shit? Jock rock? What do they call that?
Jock jams.
Jock jams. Oh, my God. That all that jock jams music really is a vibe. I hate saying that. I'm too old to be saying that stuff. But it really does make you go, oh, listen to that music.
Well, it puts you in the time. And like you said, every single three, like he lets the beat go a bit longer.
Yes.
Like Jordan, after the first one, Jordan for three, good. After the last one, he's like, feel it all. That's his fifth three-pointer. Like he's bringing you in. It's a masterful call.
It really is.
By him. One more thing, you're talking about things we heard relatively early on. Even I think it's before Jordan even makes a three-pointer. Magic points it out on the broadcast.
Here
he's like,
is.
Clyde Drexler's playing 2 to 3 feet. He's on it immediately.
I've
he's like, they're inviting, it. Yeah, they're inviting Jordan
Let's listen
to shoot
together.
The rock.
Great call. Let's listen to it.
See how Clyde Drexler is playing Michael Jordan. He's not up on him. He's playing like 2 feet off where he's enticing him to take that jump shot. And right now, Michael's 0-for-2 from out there. And let's see what happens during the course of the game.
Magic, who's like not a great broadcaster, at least at this time, early in his career here.
He had just retired.
Yeah, he just retired. Not great at the game so far, but calling that out and then it again playing out in full view, it is a great call. You're absolutely right. Magic calls that out early. Now let's get so again, this is I described earlier. They take a timeout, they come out of the timeout. Pippen gets the steal, he misses the layup, Jordan gets the dunk, and then Jordan comes back down after that and hits.
I think that's right. In between that, I think that's when Clyde airballed it.
Correct.
I think, yeah, the tip slam, Clyde comes, he airballs it with like
exactly
19
right.
on the clock.
Let's listen to that entire sequence unabated from Marv Albert and the guys.
The steal by Pippen. And Jordan. 32 for Jordan. The Bulls by 14. Drexler for three.
That's a fucking world-class call.
Just that pitch in between him, like as he gets hotter, in between him releasing this shot of just the crowd. The crowd's already on 10.
Yes.
And they go to 12 for a minute. Then it goes in, they go to 20. It's perfect.
The restraint of Fratello and Magic, and even Marv, to not come over top and be like, oh man, that's so incredible, or that's a great, I can't believe what I'm seeing, or whatever. For them to stay out of this and for it to just be raucous, crazy, incense cheering, and Michael Jordan, and then you cap the whole thing with Marv noticing in the moment, noticing the shrug, that, and this is what I can't stress enough. If Marv doesn't call that out, there's a chance the director isn't replaying that shrug throughout the rest of the game and at the end, and then it's not on SportsCenter, and then it's not, it's something we don't remember. Marv Albert could have missed that. He could have easily missed that, and then maybe the production crew doesn't go, oh, replay that shrug thing, because, but Marv mentioning that Jordan, you know, maybe didn't understand what was going on in the game, or, you know, how, you know, what he was feeling in the moment, that is an amazing moment for Marv to catch that live.
Yeah, because it, like, as you see, as he hits the shot and they come back to it, you kind of see like the back of Jordan. He's done with it. He's already done it.
Yes.
And I guess the story, I don't know if they've ever confirmed, the story is that he was doing it right at Magic.
Yes.
So it's like, maybe you don't get it if Magic's not on, he's not doing that at Fratello, you know what I'm saying? They don't have that kind of rapport. So even Magic being there, he looks at Magic, gives the shrug, Marv catches it immediately. And now we have it from every angle.
Here's Magic on this moment and his involvement in it.
I'm working for NBC. I'm covering the finals. So the night before game one, we're at Michael's house playing cards. And he said, you know what's going to happen tomorrow. I'm going to give it to this dude. So he hit that first three. And then here come the second one. Michael didn't want anybody to have nothing over him.
It's Magic being a part of this, like having another Hall of Fame legendary player sideline. He just wrapped up his career. Magic's HIV positive. Everybody presuming he's going to die at this moment. For him to be at the side of this court and for Jordan to look at Magic in this moment, for that backstory of them playing cards the night before, that's a really additive part of this moment.
It is. It's something. That's another thing. I don't know if we'll ever get that again.
Yeah.
Like Ahmad Rashad and Michael Jordan are friends.
Yes.
You know what I'm saying? Like friends. And I think they're different, like reporters and athletes, you get friendly. You might even do like a pod, like, you know what I'm saying? You get to that level. Mm-hmm. But I think those guys like legitimate. I think Ahmad Rashad was like at his father's funeral, like those type of friends.
Yes.
And yeah, I don't know if you get that. I mean, same as him and Magic, but also like, as you pointed out, that's something for me looking back. I was like, I don't think I realized until this moment, Magic had just retired.
Yes.
He was in the finals last year playing this guy.
That's right.
And retired. Like you said, everybody thinks he's going to die. And now he's calling the game. And yeah, you're not getting, even if that was, you know, another good or very good player, you're not getting that same, the insight. He's not looking over it. Byron Scott or something, you know what I'm saying? Right. Somebody the same as Magic. So that's what Magic brings. But also, let me say, Fratello and Albert, they're not selling any of Magic's jokes. They're giving him nothing. They're giving him diddly. Well, so there's that, but they're not rolling with any of his punches.
I was just going to say, it wasn't all roses for Magic during this game. They replay the sixth three-pointer and the shrug, and Mar gives the floor to Fratello and to Magic. Let's listen to that moment. Here we go.
He feels it. There's nothing else he can say other than the man feels it and lets us know.
Here's Magic.
Oh, here's that three again. You know, and just let us know that, hey, I'm feeling it. I'm feeling good.
Now, Magic just completely copied what Fratello said. A real choke job for Magic there in the moment.
Yeah, that's, man, he could have said nothing, like nothing at all. He was just like, man, soak in this atmosphere. If he just said that and just let it breathe, but no, not the Magic Man's finest hour.
To repeat nearly exactly what Fratello said word for word.
Also, a stinker by Fratello, to be fair. So to repeat the stinker, tough on both guys, especially Magic in that case.
The next credential, you mad. Rob, play my Cameron clip here.
You mad.
Was anybody mad at this moment? I love it when someone's pissed off. It makes a moment greater for me. Yes, two people were mad. The first one, Michael Jordan, strangely, was mad. Here's what Jordan had to say in his 30 for 30 doc, The Last Dance.
Clyde the Glide says we're the two best in the game, but I'm not getting into a war of words with Mike.
Clyde was a threat. You know, I'm not saying he wasn't a threat, but me being compared to him, I took offense to that.
Your thoughts on that quote?
Again, I only have the benefit of hindsight here, right? I know everything that happened in both of their careers. But at the time, can you imagine Michael Jordan's frustration? No, it's like, honestly, there shouldn't be another guard on first team with me. Like, that's how far. And this is to say nothing of Clyde Drexler, who is for sure a Hall of Fame player in his own right.
Right.
But he said there's still that level of divide. Like, again, if Jordan wasn't beefing with Isaiah like that, would Clyde have been on the?
Right.
You know what I'm saying? Yep. So there's still that level of divide. So Jordan's like, if Clyde thinks we're neck and neck, I'm here to let him know we are not. And it's exactly what he did.
It is equal parts very, very cool and very, very funny to hear him say, I took it personally that someone compared this guy to me. That's fucking so funny to hear a guy be like,
this Hall of Fame, this All-Star, All-NBA, got his team to the finals. All that. It's like if LeBron was like, man, I mean, I know Kevin Durant's good and all, but it's just the fact that people think me and this guy are neck and neck. I took personal offense to this.
You can't. It's very interesting. Maybe it's because of, again, we're looking at it in hindsight, and that came in The Last Dance, which was years after the fact. But if someone were to say something like that now in a game, it would be seen as gaslighting. It would be like a Dylan Brooks, like, he said this to go viral. Like, right. But you're listening to Michael Jordan 20 years after the fact be like, I got pissed off when somebody compared me against this other guy who was very, very good on the Dream Team, made two finals in a row, and it pissed me off that someone compared me to that guy. That's so funny.
It is, because there's other clips of Magic Johnson later. He's talking about how Michael Jordan's the best player ever. This is before Jordan has won a ring.
Yes.
He's just like, Michael Jordan's the best player ever. This is while Magic's still in his prime. Mm. Kareem is still playing or had just retired. And Magic Johnson is like, no, that's the best guy ever. Has not played in the finals game yet. So again, Jordan's like, no, I'm still that guy. Like, you can be second, but you have to acknowledge the gap between one and two.
You, in a private conversation, cigars, late night, Michael Jordan... There's no chance in hell Michael Jordan believes LeBron is as good as he is, right?
No, I don't think he believes anybody.
Yeah, that's fucking cool. That's really fucking cool.
And who am I to say he's wrong?
Who are we to say? The other person mad in this moment, Terry Porter. Let's listen to what Terry Porter had to say after the game.
You make your first couple, you're just kind of anxious to launch some more, and he definitely was in the zone. I don't know if you remind me of myself. I give Michael a lot of credit for a lot of ability, but I don't think he can match my three-point shooting.
You hear the energy in the room after the reporter says that. That sound in the room from those reporters is amazing.
That's awesome. During the game, one, Terry Porter was going off during that game. Like, he said, I talked for the conference finals, he set the record for most threes in a series. He set that the previous series.
Right.
In the previous two series, he was like 26-8 to the point where I was like, was Clyde Drexler good at all? Was his own? Like, if Jordan bricks a couple of those threes, is this just the Terry Porter show? Because he was getting buckets early.
He was. He had a great game. It is very funny to listen to a bunch of reporters laugh at him, though, in the middle of a...
That's tough.
Next credential, the test of time. This is when we compare this moment against other moments like it in history. I started looking at threes in a short period of time. Chandler Parsons had six threes in one quarter. Damn. And 10 and a half in 2014 against the Grizzlies. Again, he shrugged and he hit a bunch of threes. How many threes did he get? He only hit six. Chandler Parsons had six in one quarter and 10 and a half against the Grizzlies. If Chandler Parsons in that game had shrugged or done something, would we remember the Chandler Parsons game in the same way?
No, but respectfully, we weren't going to remember any Chandler Parsons in game. Respectfully, we would... you saying that to me, I didn't know he had ever hit six and a quarter.
That's what I'm saying. Like, I had no fucking clue. Like, Clay also had 10.5 against Chicago. He had 9.25 against Sacramento. That's from the 37-point quarter. That's in the First Bell Hall of Fame. But Chandler Parson had 6.25. Jordan had 6.5. Chandler Parson had 6.25 and 10.5. I had no clue. I've never remembered it. Obviously, like, it being Michael Jordan is a big deal, but it's crazy to think about how it really boils down to that shrug, that him shrugging. It might be the clearest definition, the clearest illustration of this podcast. It is singularly a moment. That guy, he literally just shrugs. There have been other games like it. There have been plenty of statistical games that are better than it. It really boils down to Michael Jordan shrugged and the rest of you did not.
Also, this is Jordan's second shrug of that game.
I saw it too. Did you see when he's walking off the court?
After he hits the fifth three, he's walking back with Horace Grant, and he looks at John Paxson and gives like the light, like, hey, what can you do? I'm hot.
I agree.
That's after the fifth one. And after the sixth one, that's when he goes like palms to the sky. Like, what the fuck? So that multiple shrugs in this game.
I love that you spotted that. I saw it as well. It's a little half shrug, and it makes part of my brain went, does that cheapen the second shrug? I'm going the opposite way.
I think it intensifies it.
I completely agree. It really is him wondering what's going on.
Yeah, he's like, listen, I don't know either.
Yeah.
Like, in all of this, he and his teammates are still, like, in awe.
Yes.
That Michael Jordan has hit 5 threes to this point.
The next credential is the press conference. Any great quotes? Let's listen to a clip from Michael Jordan's airtime.
I was in a groove, I was in a rhythm that I can't really explain. Back for Jordan for three. I started hitting threes like they were free throws. Pippen, up Jordan, one over again. The rim seemed like a big old huge bucket.
Back to Michael, fires the three, another one! That's unbelievable!
And I can't miss it. After a while, I just looked at Marv and Magic and those guys. What can I say? I mean, it's not me. It's just a moment.
This is the greatest performance maybe ever in the history of this league.
I mean, that's fucking cinema. Look,
they didn't say that after Chandler Parsons' 10 threes. This is maybe. So that's why his is disqualified. Sorry.
I mean, what a sequence from that movie. The use of music, the sound bites, the Chicago announcers, Jordan himself, name dropping Magic. I mean, what a sequence of that movie. And again, I love any mention of the word zone, the idea of being in a zone. Also, Jordan is consistent. Anytime he talks about this, he talks about how the threes felt like free throws. He really wasn't understanding what was happening. There's an authenticity to that shrug that is hard to beat.
Yeah, because again, this is what many have called like the greatest player of all time at that point. He's like 30 years old, maybe 31 at that point. So to still be in awe, like if Steph just started dunking from the free throw line, like we're in awe, like Steph couldn't make 7 threes in a quarter. We'd be in awe, but that's what you do. You're the best at this. If he just starts drop stepping from the free throw line, like Steph Curry has 6 free throw line dunks in the same game, that's where it'd be the similar level of I'm just jumping from the free throw line. Oh, now
the next credential is the X factor. Do you have an X factor for this game, Tyler? Can I pitch you mine?
Please. Yeah, while I think, I'm listening.
You brought it up, and I couldn't agree with you more, and I've been waiting to bring him up. Ahmad Rashad is the best sideline reporter ever because he was genuinely funny and entertaining, but he had real access. He was real friends with these guys. He was very good friends with Michael Jordan.
Mm-hmm.
And it's his fingerprints are all over this game and deepening your appreciation of Michael Jordan. Early in the game, I'm sure you saw it, Ahmad Rashad ends up talking to a guy by the name of George Kohler. Let's listen to that together.
Yeah.
Ahmad Rashad back at Chicago Stadium. Now, 8 years ago when Michael Jordan was drafted here, you know, nobody sent anybody to the airport from the Bulls to pick him out. And this man, George Kohler, found him wandering around the airport.
Well, I wasn't really wandering around the airport. He stepped off the airplane. I was standing there waiting for him, strictly by accident.
And you happened to be a chauffeur at that point?
At that point, yes. Had my own company and went out there to pick up a customer. The guy never showed up, and Mike was the last guy off that airplane. So I asked him if he needed a ride. He said yes.
And it worked out very well. You've been his personal assistant now for 8 years.
8 years, yes.
All right, George. Thanks a lot. Mar.
That's just not a moment in a story you're getting from anyone other than Ahmad.
Yeah, even before the game, he's talking about how Jordan hurt his or had the bum wrist.
Yes.
He's like, no, he's feeling pretty good. We were lifting weights this morning.
Yes.
Michael Jordan and I. And that's the, I feel like at the, he throws it back to Marv and Fratello. And I feel like at the time it's like, oh, he's rubbing it in his face, rubbing it in our face that he's Jordan's friend. Now that's like, this is the access that we prefer to hear it as direct from the player's mouth as possible.
100%.
Ahmad Rashad was just, had that at the time. He was just that good. I mean, still that good.
And that George Kohler, I start digging into the George Kohler story. George Kohler in The Last Dance is lower thirded. His, you know, it says George Kohler's name. And then underneath his name, it says he's titled as Jordan's personal assistant and best friend in The Last Dance.
That's a hell of a promotion.
I'm like, I'm like going to look for this story to get proof of it. I saw more about George Kohler. He said, this is from an ESPN article, I told him if you need, this is Kohler talking about Jordan. I told him if you need to know of any places to live, restaurants to eat, you want to go out for a beer, you've got a friend in Chicago. And oh, by the way, congratulations on your gold medal. This is 84. This is the first moment that Kohler meets Jordan. Congratulations on your gold medal. 2 weeks later, Kohler's phone rang. Quote, I heard Georgie, my boy, Kohler recalled. I'm going, who's this? And he says, it's MJ. I said, I don't know any MJ. And he says, yes, you do. And I'm like, I'm not going to argue. I don't know who this is. And he's like, you dumb shit. It's Michael Jordan.
I love the day. Like, there was no caller ID. Of course. Yeah, oh, this guy's yanking MJ. I don't know any MJ. Only in the 80s. Yeah.
Jordan asked Kohler to pick up his parents from the airport the next day for his first game, and the two struck a handshake deal with George Kohler taking Jordan back and forth to O'Hare for road games all season, after which they would return to Jordan's townhouse in Northbrook, Illinois, where they would spend hours talking. This is, that is amazing. And it really speaks to what a loser you have to be that good at basketball, right? Like, you think about Jordan and Kobe, they had fucking no friends because you don't have time for friends when you're that good at something.
Jordan did. I think Jordan is maybe the most regular megastar.
Right.
Maybe ever.
Right.
Because he wasn't a prodigy. Yeah, he's a regular. He liked to drink, talk shit. His family, like, they fixed up with their hands. They just, like, normal Southern. I feel like I know families like the Jordan family. They're as regular as can be. Only one of their kids is probably the best basketball player of all time. Outside that, they're pretty normal people.
Fixing stuff with your hands is very funny. The George Kohler thing. I'm just reading about George Kohler nonstop. George Kohler told Terry Pluto of the Akron Beacon Journal in 1988 that Jordan orders a quarter pounder with cheese, a large order of fries, and an orange drink at McDonald's. Terry Pluto told him that he orders it at the drive-thru, and then when they drive around to get it, Jordan is the one that takes it. Everyone loses their mind inside the restaurant, and then the two of them drive off. a perfect McDonald's order from Michael Jordan. I have to. The orange drink on top of the large fries and the.
He's a regular guy. I'm telling you. Jordan is the most regular. Again, only could a regular guy even be like, yeah, you could take me home. Like off that. I don't know who you are. You might be a creep, a sick. Yeah, pick up my parents. You seem nice enough. That's regular. That's Southern hospitality ingrained in his mind. It's like, this guy's probably fine.
Yes.
I'll take you to my house. What's the worst that could happen?
And the orange drink and a large order of fries at the quarter pounder. What a normal all-American guy Michael Jordan is, except for the fact that, again, maybe the best in his craft ever of all time. And he hates, you know, people comparing other players against him.
Outside that, he's just you or me. He's just you or me.
Back to Ahmad and the X Factor. Here's Ahmad later in the game talking to Michael's father, James Jordan.
So let's go over to Ahmad.
All right, thanks, Mark. I'm joined now by James Jordan, and we have talked about Michael being focused in the past, but today, this is ridiculous.
Well, I'll tell you, today this kid has shown that he eat his Wheaties, drank his Gatorade, and he's wearing his Hanes underwear.
I mean, pretty fucking good. For James Jordan to have that on deck, that's pretty good.
See, again, like now, it's everybody's been corporatized. Yes. Now, like, you know what I'm saying? Yes. So this was just a dad being like, you know what would help my son, Michael Jordan, out? Let me do him a solid. We're drinking our Gatorade. We're wearing our Hanes. We want to be like my, he's just, let me do my part in helping with the empire, son.
I want to quickly talk about the Hanes part of this. It feels like my good friend, Michael Torpy, who's co-hosted on the show before, was in the Michael Jordan spot with Michael Jordan when Jordan had that Hitler mustache. So I think a lot about the Hanes partnership and branding with Michael Jordan. Is there another, you know, it's weird because I feel like you could make a joke about Michael Jordan promoting something as plebeian as Hanes undershirts, like six to a pack, like $10, you know, for the full pack undershirts. Like, you could be like, why is he promoting this, like, these shit t-shirts? But there's actually something like very powerful about being associated with such a normal, gigantic,
he's a regular guy.
He's a regular guy.
He wear Hanes just like you and me. He eat McDonald's. He eat his Wheaties. He drink Gatorade. It's just after that, he goes and dunks from the free throw line and hits six three-pointers in a game. Before that, that's who they're selling to, the regular guy, like Michael Jordan.
I feel like NBA players today are like, you know, they're promoting luxury brands and stuff. I want a guy that's got the balls to go, I fucking promote these fucking, you know, $2.50 t-shirts. They're the best.
You remember when Kevin Love was doing ads for milk? Just milk and just not a brand. Yeah. Not like Daisy or Dairy. Not a brand. Just milk on the whole.
The concept of milk.
Yeah, he's like, milk. I'll fuck with it.
The other X factor for me, late in this game, Robert Pack has a crazy dunk, and Scott Williams loses his mind on the sidelines. It's one of those Robert Pack dunks. If you're old enough to remember 90s basketball, you remember Robert Pack dunks.
I gotta say, Scott Williams in itself, he might be the X factor. He came in, was giving some good first quarter. He might have been like a undrafted rookie at that point. It's just like, yeah, game one of the finals, play ball.
The Bulls had all those guys, all those role player guys, Cliff Levingston, Scotty Hansen played in this game. Will Perdue is on the bench of this game, which makes me go, Will Perdue never played during this game? And you're like, well, no, Cartwright started. But then the second Cartwright gets shipped out, they take their bench guy and move him up to starter. Like, those that is gone from today's NBA. The guy that, like, sits on the bench and it's like, oh, now the guy that was above me got, you know, moved to a different team or retired or whatever happened. And now I get to step up and I assume the starting role. That does not happen. There are a ton of guys like that on the Bulls team. That all had serious moments in playing time in these games.
Yeah, and like you meant, like Hansen and Scott, those guys would get like first quarter minutes.
Yeah, for sure.
And when Portland was up, so this wasn't like let's rest our guys. This is so Phil Jackson said, either I trust you guys or the starter, y'all not getting it done. I'm willing to go to whoever on the bench. And they gave good minutes.
Trill, did you see the movie Air?
I did. I did watch that one.
What'd you think?
I thought it was, I didn't know a whole lot going into it. So I didn't know, you know, how much they would get into like the actual athletic side, but I appreciate that they didn't. Yes. I thought it was interesting, the side, like the story that they told. So I thought it was a good watch.
I did too. I thought it was a really like simplified, you know, you mentioned it in relation to KD. It was a very simplistic telling, but a good telling of that story. I really enjoyed it. I saw it got nominated for a Golden Globe, which I thought was interesting. I'm curious to see how it'll do over award season, but I really enjoyed it. I thought Damon was good. I thought Chris Tucker was good. Oh, and Viola Davis is fucking amazing. Mm. Like, to me, she should 100% be nominated for Best Supporting. I mean, I don't give a shit about those awards, but if you're going to give a Best Supporting Actress award out, Viola Davis has got to be on that list.
Yeah, I feel like it, for whatever she's in, but particularly in this role. This was like, yeah, like you said, a simplistic enough story. It's like, yeah, let's get some stud actors and just have them show what they got. Yeah. And I like, it wasn't too long. They didn't get too deep into the weeds. Yeah, it was a good watch.
And I think I read that, maybe I heard it or I read it. I probably heard it because I don't read any more than I have to. You know what I'm saying? No. I think Jordan, when they approached Jordan about this movie, he requested Viola Davis to play his mom, which is fantastic.
It's one of those like, who else? Unless my actual mother is going to do it, who else but Viola Davis?
Trill, I see the time is almost running out on us. It's time for More Important. It's America's favorite podcast segment. I'm about to ask you a series of questions. Your answer to these questions are all far more important than anything we've talked about so far in this episode. Are you ready for More Important?
I'm ready.
We just talked about the movie Air. What is your favorite movie of this year so far?
It might be recency bias, but I did just watch. I'm a huge Barry Sanders fan, so Bye Bye Barry.
Is it really good?
Really enjoyed it.
I haven't seen it yet.
I'm a Barry Sanders super fan, so that I really enjoyed that one.
Next question, more important. Favorite 90s television show? We're talking about Jordan. We're talking about the 90s. Do you have a favorite 90s television show?
Does it have to have started in the 90s?
No.
I got to go Simpsons then. That's probably mine.
A great answer. Do you have a favorite 90s celebrity who's maybe a bit of a time capsule? Maybe somebody that has that doesn't no longer exists in, you know, the pop culture lexicon today, but was a monster during the 90s. Anybody that you like that was 90s specific?
Man, you know, the first name that came to mind was Weird Al Yankovic.
Weird Al Yankovic.
Because it's one of those, like, now, I mean, everybody has so much access to put out or make music. You can make, you know, parody or whatever. But at the time, it was like, he was just murdering the hits, man. And they all banged. If it was Michael Jackson or whatever, Al was just on top of it. And I don't know, he's just famous in a very 90s way that I don't know if anybody will ever be that kind of famous.
It's interesting in that he did a thing and became very, very successful from it, and no one could follow in his footsteps. Like, there was nobody else to follow him. He was singular, and that speaks to how incredible he is and still is today. Earlier, we talked about your favorite dunk, and one of my favorite dunks, the Stromal Swift, absolute boof on fucking Tyrus Thomas. Do you have a favorite pass?
I try to cycle through some, but the one that always comes back, I know you remember they used to show like the old NBA film stuff. I don't remember if this is an NBA or an international game even, but Arvydas Sabonis catches one like at the free throw line, throws it backwards, and just holds it. Just holds it. Just like that. The whole play, like, the ball went exactly where it was supposed to go. Bucket. Everybody, they're coming back, and he's still just holding it. So that might be my favorite pass. That's rare.
You are so specific in such a delightful way. For me to ask that question of you, for you to not have prepared for this answer, and for you to pull that Arvydas Sabonis moment, is just perfect, Trill Withers. A fantastic answer. Again, thank you for being on the show. Who's the best NBA announcer? Do you have a favorite NBA announcer?
I think Mike Breen is getting there.
He's really
Mike Breen is fantastic. It doesn't matter the game. It doesn't matter who he's with. Yep. I feel like he maybe better than anybody ever knows the, like, I guess, pacing of the game. He knows he can't let, like, the bang go in the second quarter.
Right.
He might not even be a game 4-1. because you have everyone counts, and I think he has mastered that. So Mike Breen comes to mind.
I love it. He you know, people say that about LeBron all the time, like don't take LeBron James for granted. I think we should feel the same way about Mike Breen. He is
100%
as good as it gets.
100%. I guess it's more analyst side, and I don't know if this is controversial. I love when Hubie Brown calls a game.
I do too.
I love when Hubie Brown calls a game. I know he gets some flack on social media, but I've probably learned more about watching basketball from Hubie Brown than any analyst, and I feel like that's the goal, right?
Yes. Teach. I love it. Do you have an opinion on Bill Walton as an analyst guy?
I like Bill. I think Bill works better like three-man booth. Yes. Two-man booth Bill is too much. It's too much studio space to explore, and he will explore that studio space. Which is, if it's a stinky game, you want him.
Yes.
To explore that studio space. Yes. I think a three-man where they can just kick it to him because he has great analysis and clearly knows the game. So I like Billy in the three-man booth where he can get his rambling off, but there's also some structure to him.
You might be the Michael Jordan of more important. These are phenomenal answers. And the Bill Walton thing is just me riffing and doing a follow-up, and then you go, he's better in a three-man booth. You're absolutely right. I completely agree with you. There's a great tweet about Walton talking about the Colorado River during a game. And there's just some of that, earthy, on drugs, Grateful Dead, Bill Walton stuff that I don't mind hearing from time to time,
right?
Particularly in a slow regular season game.
I'm also a person, I miss Jeff Van Gundy and Mark Jackson on the call because I enjoy tangents that they don't have to do with basketball. I appreciate that. So if he's talking about the Colorado River or Jeff Van Gundy's talking about the price of a haircut these days, I appreciate that. I don't need it to be all X's and O's.
Next question. Pound for pound, who's the hardest dunker of all time?
I mean, Strowman might have to be mentioned just with the sound, the sound he makes rims make. But I would have to... I got to go Rain Man, Sean Kemp.
I love it.
Or Dominique. Those are the...
They're both very good. There's something about how stringy Sean Kemp is and how hard he still yaks it that has now, I believe, we're now 2 for 2 on that question. I think the last person I asked that to also answered Sean Kemp. It's a phenomenal answer, and it might be the correct answer, overall.
Yeah. I was trying to think, Zion... I mean, Zion dunks hard, but not like Kim, not like Dom. They were angry at the rim.
Yeah.
It felt like.
All right. Last question, more important. Trill Withers, name something that really kicks ass.
I got to say, I'm on kind of a tea kick lately. I've just been drinking any tea I can find. And I feel like I'm very late to the party. So tea kicks ass. I'm sorry. I've been missing out for thousands of years. Has anyone heard about this tea? So right now tea kicks ass.
Phenomenal. More important from Trill Withers. The next credential is our cosign. The floor is yours, Trill. Does Michael Jordan shrug belong in the first ballot Hall of Fame, and why?
Yes, I think the Michael Jordan shrug definitely belongs first ballot Hall of Fame. Because we could say the shrug alone. I don't even need to say Michael Jordan's name.
Yep.
If I said the shrug,
yep,
people would know what I'm talking about. I think it, in a long career of hit, of moment after moment after moment, it stands out to me because it's the star was still on the ascent. Mm-hmm. You know what I'm saying? Again, this is right before ring number 2 mm-hmm. of 6. So he wasn't the Jordan we would even know him as a couple years later, where he's one of the most famous people in the world. Space Jam, 70 wins, all that. He's still, I got one ring, I'm still looking for another. And the shrug identifies that time, that series, that ring immediately. So for that, the presentation, the other stuff we've mentioned, but it, just saying the shrug alone and people knowing what that means, what that reference is, I think that makes it first ballot.
It's time for the induction speech. That's when I get to decide whether this thing goes in. Listen, I could take everything that Trill said and throw it into the trash if I want to. I'm not going to. I think he's a fantastic guest. We all have a lot to learn from Trill Withers. That's your take home for today. I believe that Michael Jordan owns this move. It's like a thing. It's like a gesture that any person on the entire planet can use, and it's like universally understood. But if you do it while playing sports, that is Michael Jordan's. And I don't know when it will stop being Michael Jordan's, but it'll be long after I'm dead. I'm 100% certain about that. He owns the shrug. The second thing, Jordan during that Airtime movie, him saying it was the moment, he really sort of tees up the thesis statement of this podcast. He does not understand what happened in this moment, and he's acknowledging it.
After a while, I just looked at Marvin and Magic and those guys. What can I say? I mean, it's not me. It's just a moment.
He is acknowledging that there are moments in sports, in games, and particularly in this finals game one, that are bigger than even Michael Jordan. Who am I to tell Michael Jordan he's wrong? This thing is goes in to the first ballot Hall of Fame. Congratulations to Michael Jordan, Terry Porter, Scottie Pippen, Trill Withers, Phil Jackson, everybody else, the Benny
Bobby
the Bull,
Hansen.
Bobby Hansen,
Scott Williams,
Cliff Levinson,
Craig Hodges.
This moment, the shrug is going into the first ballot Hall of Fame. Congratulations.
Much deserved.
Trill, what are you working on? How can people follow you? Tell us a little bit again about Sheets.
You follow me, Tyler I Am, on Twitter, Instagram, wherever you do your social media, ing. And for Sheet and Tyler, that will be dropping after the new year. We're dropping some clips on the Underdog NBA channel. It's just Underdog NBA on YouTube. If the people, if they want to hear Rasheed Wallace talk about the time David Stern hold over them, threaten their draft position. I don't know if anybody wants to hear about that. But if they do, the Underdog NBA YouTube channel is where you can find us.
That's fantastic. Make sure you follow and support Trill Withers. He's the best. He's as good as anyone that's ever done it on the bird. That's not up for debate. Thank you so much, Trill, for being on the show again. I appreciate it.
Of course. Appreciate you, man.
That's it. That's the show. May Trill Withers live forever. At Tyler I Am. Hit Underdog Fantasy on YouTube. Sheed and Tyler in the new year. You got to check it out. He's as good as it gets. My thanks to Trill for coming on again. This will be the last new episode of 2023. We're going to run a holiday classic of First Ballot next week. Our first week in 88 straight weeks that we're taking a break. 88 straight weeks of new episodes of the First Ballot Hall of Fame podcast. But I'm giving the team a 1 week break. What a boss. What a goddamn boss I am. Heart of gold, I tell you. Thanks to you all for listening to us. Wishing you peace and good health in the new year. I really appreciate all of you for supporting the show. I hope you all do me a favor of rating and reviewing us. It will help us a bunch. Thank you so much. Credits, my love, and thanks to Rob Bob Bobby Arucci, who edits the show. Jessica Seng, who produces it. EJ Cabasal is the new guy. David Ostramskis is our Balls Life producers. All the beats on First Ballot are made by my guy, Rhythm J. Follow him on social at Rhythm J. Shout out to Kuya Dro Stacks on Twitter. I appreciate him listening to our show, following the socials, and commenting on the shows. I appreciate you, sir. Happy holidays if you celebrate. Remember, the new year, it's just a construct. And please keep listening to First Ballot. New episode soon.
Monster.
Oh, my goodness.